First, we'll be discussing the Harman case, which broke last week with Philip Weiss, the blogger and investigative reporter. Last Sunday, Congressional Quarterly broke a story, subsequently confirmed by the New York Times, revealing that Representative Jane Harman, a California Democrat, had been heard in an NSA wiretap telling a suspected Israeli agent that she would do what she could to reduce espionage-related charges against two former AIPAC officials. The still unidentified suspected agent promised in return to help Harman become chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Just when this conversation took place is disputed. It may have been 2004, 2005, or 2006. CQ and the Times both reported that after Harman's conversation was intercepted, the FBI began a preliminary investigation, but the then Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez shut it down because he believed that Harman could help the Bush administration defend its warrantless wiretapping program. Indeed, Harman was an ardent defender of the program and was one of several members of Congress who tried to persuade the New York Times not to reveal the program's existence. There's a lot here. We have a routine political corruption scandal involving an ambitious and perhaps ethically challenged politician, yet another example of Bush Justice Department scheming, perhaps a settling of old scores against Harman by former CIA director Republican Porter Goss, and perhaps a case study of the Israel lobby in action. To help us sort out all these disparate strands, we have on the phone investigative journalist and political blogger Philip Weiss of philipweiss.org. Hello, Philip.
Good morning, Josh.
How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Very well. So let's start with the backstory. So what can you tell us about this mix of, you know, classified information, AIPAC officials, Israel, Lawrence Franklin? What was this about? What was going on here?
Well, I guess the first thing to say is that, you know, this is a 4 or 5 year old conversation, phone conversation, you say maybe even 3 year old conversation that's coming out now. And I think the reason it's coming out now, which is the sort of central context, sort of legal context for this event, is that the government brought a case under the espionage laws against some Israel lobbyists, two Israel lobbyists, Steve Rosen and Ken Weissman. It's a very controversial case. The government said that they were sharing secrets with the Israelis. And the government charged them fully 4 years ago in 2005. And that case seems to be going down now. It's a troubled case. And I think what's happened here is that the sort of lawyers in the Justice Department who want to sustain this case, or people who want to sustain this case, have leaked this kind of golden nugget from the case that seems to show how corrupting the Israel lobby is in our politics. So I think that at the heart, I mean, you can talk about a lot of things this case is. It's a case that, in a way, is about Jewish identity. We can get to that piece. But it's also about this sort of central case against the Israel lobby that parts of the federal government want to pursue and other parts don't pursue. And in this struggle, this 4-year-old phone conversation has emerged, which is very damning, or seems to be very damning.
Just going back to these two AIPAC officials, one is Stephen Rosen, he was the policy director. The other was Keith Weissman, who's a senior analyst specializing, I think, in Iran.
Ken Weissman, I think it is. Yeah.
Ken Weissman. When this happened, people were kind of stunned because at one point the FBI actually raided AIPAC's offices and took computers and so on, and it really surfaced a lot of concerns about dual loyalty and stuff like that. Who were these guys? And they were subsequently fired by AIPAC, but can you tell us a little bit more about their involvement?
You know, Marilyn, frankly, I don't know a lot about the case or what their involvement was, except that the defense that they've had is that what they were doing is what sort of lots of people in Washington do, lots of reporters do, lots of lobbyists do, is they talk to politicians. They talk to government officials, as Rosen and Weissman were doing, and then they pass on the information they're getting to other people. Without knowing the specifics of the case, I can tell you that they were engaged in what seems to be fairly standard activities of the lobby, which is engaging with White House officials, just as Jane Harman offered to engage with White House officials. And personally, I'm for the case. I think that this is a gray area, but I think they went over the line. My impression is I feel that AIPAC has gone over the line generally on this, and that they're essentially working for the state of Israel here. Elements in our government share that belief and wanted to make a case about this instance in which they had shared these government documents with Israeli officials. The defense of them, as I've said, is they're just doing what reporters and others have done. In fact, they were talking with reporters. Weissman and Rosen were talking with Ken Pollack, who was a think tanker at the time, and I think also with Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post. So they were sort of sharing this information around with people who they thought would be friendly to their cause.
Well, clearly there was a lot of fire here, right? I mean, you've got this guy Franklin, who's in a former Defense Department guy, worked for Feith and the neocons,
yes,
who's in jail for 12 years. So it's in involving this case. So there's something happened, right?
Yes. Oh, I think something happened. I'm afraid, again, you know, I don't want to mislead your listeners by suggesting that I know a lot about what exactly was being shared here. I don't. Franklin is not in prison now, by the way. He apparently is working as a parking attendant, but on a probationary release program or something of that character. But, yeah, something happened. I think, you know, something's been happening for many years. The Israel lobby has been working to try to learn as much as it can about how the government operates. Now, in some cases, it seems to go over the line. And there's a real intimacy between Israeli government officials and American government officials. Is that illegal? I think in this case, what the government lawyers wanted to argue was, yeah, they're sharing stuff that they shouldn't be sharing.
Right. To get back specifically to the Harmon case, you know, Time reported many of the aspects that were reported in CQ back in 2006.
That's right.
I wonder why it didn't have legs then. Was it just the addition of the actual transcripts, or is there something else that's changed?
Well, the story that's come out, the Time story, Time magazine did report it in 2006, and it didn't have the transcript, which included these statements by alleged statements by Jane Harmon saying, "I'm going to waddle into this case, and this conversation never happened." So it didn't have these kind of explosive moments. But I think part of it is that in 2006, people really weren't ready to talk about the Israel lobby. And in 2006, the Walden Mearsheimer paper had just appeared in the London Review of Books, and there was a great deal of opposition to it. 3 years on, there's a lot more sympathy and openness to the idea that the Israel lobby is this powerful force in our politics that isn't always operating in the best interests of Americans. And I think part of it is the Obama's election has changed the political landscape. Here's Jane Harmon, who was an Iraq war hawk, apparently caught cutting a deal with a suspected Israeli agent. The idea that concerns for Israel's security played a role in the Iraq war have become much more commonplace in our politics. So I guess the short answer is Americans and the press seem to be open to the idea that it's fair game to investigate the Israel lobby.
I want to get back to this question of the concerns of dual loyalty. You know, I mean, the sort of the lever in this transaction was Chaim Sabin, who's a toy maker and also the founder of the philanthropist behind the pro-Israel Sabin Institute. And he had allegedly agreed to withhold the donations from Pelosi. He was the lever, the hammer in this. You know, what does it say about these concerns of dual loyalty if American businessmen actually are working with the Israeli government to influence, you know, appointments within the Congress?
I think that the issue of dual loyalty is an important one. It's one that anti-Zionists and non-Zionists have raised time and again since, you know, certainly the 1920s. And lately, concerns of dual loyalty have been voiced by mainstream journalists such as John Judis of The New Republic and Joe Klein of Time magazine. You know, when you set up a law of return where all Jews can be ingathered to the state of Israel, when you set up a situation in which Israel is hugely dependent on the support of a superpower to maintain its relationship, it's fairly, hostile relationship with its neighbors. It has an intimate relationship with the United States half a world away and doesn't get along with some of its neighbors. These things are ingredients for a very important role for American Jews as guardians of the state of Israel. And as Alan Dershowitz has said, supporting Israel is the secular religion of many American Jews. That's a recipe for dual loyalty. And the foreword this week says that suspicions of dual loyalty have pervaded the federal government for 60 years. That's true. They have pervaded the federal government at a low level, and they've even pervaded elements of Jewish life that doesn't think this is in Americans' interests or in Jewish interests.
You're listening to Beyond the Pale here on WBAI in New York 99.5. And we're talking with investigative journalist Philip Weiss, who blogs at philipweiss.com. It's called Mondo Weiss. That forward story was interesting because it really talked a lot about a tension between the Department of State and the White House, where supportive of Israel have always sort of looked to the White House. And indeed, the White House has, from the very beginning, been willing to overrule state on some issues.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, if you consider that in 61 years ago, the following partition, war had begun in Palestine. And part of the promise of partition, the UN vote in 1947, the people who supported partitioning Palestine, the promise was, hey, there won't be violence. And already there was violence. And the State Department was saying, hey, let's revoke partition. Let's go back to a sort of a League of Nations or some sort of international mandate that will control this territory. The State Department was for that, and Truman overruled it. And subsequently, when Truman wanted to recognize the State of Israel in May, his Secretary of State, I think it was George Marshall, said, you know, I won't vote for you in the next election if you do this. So that does reflect this enmity, this real tension, which again showed up in the Chas Freeman case a few weeks ago, where Freeman is an Arabist. Freeman really questions the degree to which support for Israel is in America's interest. So this is an ancient tension in our politics, and I think one of the great things about the Harmon case is that it's bringing it to the fore, and rather than being a sort of a bureaucratic backroom struggle, it's something that Americans will get to discuss.
There was another tension that at least the Times article brought out between the CIA department and the Justice Department on whether or not to pursue the Harmon investigation. And some suggested that there was some sort of personal feud between Porter Goss, who was leading the CIA at the time, and Representative Harmon. I wonder what we can make of that particular tension, whether it says something about the internal politics of the Bush administration, in which we're more invested in the NSA's warrantless wiretapping program, or if it's really about personal politics between Goss and Harmon.
You know, Josh, again, I'm going to have to recuse myself on the basis of ignorance. I that angle of the story, I haven't studied that. But what it touches on that I think is very important is the fact that Harmon worked very closely. Here's a liberal Democrat from California, quote-unquote liberal Democrat on social issues. She worked very closely with the Bush administration. And I think this is the Jewish identity piece that is really fascinating and that Jews have to come to deal with, is why do our representatives, not just our political representatives, but Jewish congressmen specifically, why did they work so closely with the Bush administration on its war agenda? And here's somebody, Jane Harmon, who supported the Iraq war, said nice things about the sort of enhanced interrogation methods. And this is sort of a wake-up call to the Jewish community, too, about who do we want to be represented by. Here are these all these former anti-Vietnam War congressmen who have now sort of supported the kind of permanent war of terror. And I think that awakening is going on, too.
Well, thank you very much. This is, again, Philip Weiss, blogger at philipweiss.org. And you're listening to Beyond the Pale.
Phil, I actually have last little question. It just occurred to me. Laura Rosen wrote that an Israeli agent, and this Israeli agent is in inverted commas because nobody knows who it is. And indeed, I heard Representative Harmon in an interview on NPR, who on the one hand said basically we have to find out whether any conversation took place. But on the other hand said it was an American. So that's a little odd. But in any event, this Israeli agent is comfortable enough, Laura Rosen writes, with approaching Harmon suggests there's someone who's comfortable working with Congress and raises the question of who else might have been picked up in this wiretapping investigation of this particular agent.
Yeah, I think it's, that's one of the things that makes this a delightful story. I mean, it's a horrifying story, but it's also delightful. There's so much mystery here. And the amount of emails I've gotten about who that suspected Israeli agent is are just amazing. I didn't realize Rosen has suggested, well, who else was picked up here in Congress? Is that the point?
That's right. That's right.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I find it, I just as a news reader, I just think it's one of the greatest stories. And Jeff Stein, who broke the story at CQ, has said that it was an Israeli double agent, a suspected double agent.
All right. Well, we're going to have to keep our eyes on this one. Thanks so much, Phil Weiss.
Thanks, Marilyn. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
That's Phil Weiss from philweiss.org.
Org.
Phil Weiss.org. Mondo Weiss. Follow his blog. It's always interesting.
Thanks,
Phil.